This is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. We're a year out from Brazil's next presidential vote. And if we've learned one thing of late, a lot can happen between now and then. But we can be looking for clues of what's to come. And for that, my colleague Luisa Leme spoke with Dr. Mauricio Moura, founder and CEO of IDEA Big Data. He talks with us about how Jair Bolsonaro's approval stacks up at this point in his presidency compared to that of his predecessors. And Dr. Moura also digs into the demographics of those who still support Bolsonaro, the Lula factor, potential newcomers to keep an eye out for, and what could sway Brazilians' minds. Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Mauricio Moura, thank you so much for participating in our episode of Latin America in Focus today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Mauricio, pollsters are kind of historians of elections and of, you know, temperature moods in countries, right? So I need to ask you, how long has it been that you've been taking the pulse of Brazilians over time?
I think that will reveal my age, but I have been doing this for 20 years. Especially in Brazil, but I have done international work for another 15 years, so it sounds like a long time for me, especially.
From the time that you started this work to now, what can we say were the most important changes in how we look at elections in Brazil?
I think the biggest issue is not only about Brazil itself, but it's a global issue. Is that the voters, the people, are much more familiar with technology. So with that, they access much more information about the politicians, about the election itself, and they are able to make decisions in a shorter term. So people used to make a mindful decision, getting information from TV, television, from the papers. Now they open a cellular phone and they do a search about any candidate, and they have a huge amount of information. So and also for the politicians, the technology did allow the politicians to communicate directly with the voters. So they don't rely heavily as they used to communicate. They needed before the TV networks, they needed before the magazines, they needed the papers. Now they have their own space, they create their own channel of communication, and that has changed many things. It has changed the way people decide, that's been the way people access information, has changed the way we collect data. So I think the biggest move was from the tech side.
If you're looking at those changes, we can look at these elections that are coming up in Brazil in 2022 the same way, right? Of course not. Even if you think about the last election, right? Bolsonaro was the outsider. He didn't have a big party machine behind him. Brazilian system has always required big party coalitions. You mentioned time on television. This was all very important. And the feeling is that, you know, Bolsonaro in the last election nailed all these opportunities in terms of technology and social media and creating this direct channel with voters. So how do we look at Brazil's coalition political system now? Having a big party or having support in Congress, is this important?
Yeah, first of all, the technology allowed Bolsonaro to win that election. He was like doing very great work, not only in the social media side, but also on the communication apps. He did a lot of campaign through the WhatsApp that's very heavily used in Brazil. We always do polling about WhatsApp, and 90% of the voters, they do have WhatsApp. Most of them are engaged in WhatsApp groups. So WhatsApp is a big thing in Brazil, as WhatsApp is a big thing, for example, in India, in the Indian elections as well. So, and the technology allowed many outsiders globally to become political actors. I can name Podemos and Ciudadanos in Spain. I can name the Five Star Movement in Italy. Even Donald Trump in 2015, he was a heavy user of social media. So the technology allowed the outsiders to win elections. However, one thing is to win an election being an outsider. Another different thing is to be an outsider in the government. And one of the things that we learned looking at the numbers and the elections worldwide is that the life of those outsiders in the next political cycle is very tough. So we see all the outside parties with a very tough times. We saw the Five Star Movement in Italy losing ground. That same happened in Podemos and Ciudadanos in Spain. We see the Donald Trump losing an election, not being reelected. We see a lot of trouble with the En Marche, the movement and the party of Macron in France. And that it's an issue for Bolsonaro. First of all, Bolsonaro doesn't have a party yet. So it's a very unique situation. So we don't know if he's going to have a big party or not behind him next year. We have some thoughts about where he's going to land, but nothing officially. But the issue is about that when you go to government, you are evaluated by voters from what you were able to deliver. That's a very different ballpark from being an outsider in an election. So re-election is about, it's almost a referendum. It's almost what we call a recall about the people that are running the office. So Bolsonaro will face a very tough election next year because he's not well evaluated. Right now, only 25%, one out of four Brazilians, approved the Bolsonaro's work as president of Brazil. And this is much lower compared to his peers that were reelected after the dictatorship. And I'm talking about Fernando Henrique Cardoso, that was reelected in 1998, but in 1997, he had 40% of approval rate. Mm-hmm. Lula, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, was reelected in 2006, but in 2005, he had 35% of approval rate. And we had Dilma, that even facing a huge, massive protest in Brazil in 2013, she had 30% of approval rate. So Bolsonaro compared to his peers, are doing worse.
So wait, Bolsonaro has a lower approval rate right now than what Dilma Rousseff had before the 2013 protests?
Absolutely. She had 30% wow. of approval rate, and he has been very nice with him. He has 25%. And on top of that, not only the approval side, but the rejection side, Bolsonaro is doing worse. Bolsonaro has right now 50% at least of Brazilians that reject him, that have like a very negative evaluation. They say that he's doing a very bad or a really bad work as a president. So it's very tough to be reelected when half of the country do not approve your job as president. So he's gonna have a very hard time to be reelected because of that.
But it hasn't been always like that, right? So can we talk about how he has been losing support over time?
No, not at all. Actually, it's interesting because he lost. First of all, in the beginning of his term in office, he lost about 20 percentage points of approval rate. That were basically the voters that voting for him, that did vote for him just to not elect the PT, the Work Party. And when Bolsonaro started the government, they were not aligned with his policies. That was 2019, with the first year of government. In 2020, after the pandemic, he lost another important piece of support, about 10 percentage points of people that voted for Bolsonaro to end corruption in the Brazil political system. That people that saw the former Minister of Justice, Sergio Moro, the former judge of the famous anti-corruption operation called Lava Jato, the car wash operation, mm-hmm. the people, after Moro left the government in April 2020, those people were also not supporting Bolsonaro anymore. And in 2021, Brazil entered in a very difficult period in terms of economics. As you know, we are facing a high unemployment rate. We are facing many signs of inflation. Because of the crisis generated by the pandemic, thousands of businesses in Brazil were shut off. So all this economic, negative agenda did hurt him. And he lost a lot of support, especially in a very important region of Brazil, the Southeast, that combines big states in terms of population. We're talking about São Paulo, Rio, Minas Gerais, mm-hmm. especially on those places that combine big metropolitan areas that are very affected by the economic conditions. He lost a lot of ground on that side of the country. On the other hand, it's important to understand who are those 25% of the voters that support him.
That's what I was going to ask you now. So in the middle of all this chaos and all like this really gloomy, scenario for Bolsonaro, it's not really favorable to him. Who still supports him? Who is the base? And what are the issues that they are most sensitive to?
Yes, we do study a lot this group, because imagine, Brazil had a tough time during the pandemic, and people criticize a lot the work and the response that the federal government did about the pandemic. The president itself tried to separate his image from the vaccination that really was a big thing in Brazil after Brazil got the vaccines. So who are those supporters? And the group is a combination of three pillars of support. One, I call the originals, the people that are supporting Bolsonaro since 2017, that he was only a kind of the pre-candidate, pre-presidential candidate, but nobody was actually give attention of Bolsonaro. And those people are basically male, under 40 years old. They are concentrated in the metropolitan areas. They are highly educated. They are the people, for example, that went to the streets on the Brazilian Independence Day this year to show support for Bolsonaro. And they are basically anti everything. They are anti the Supreme Court. They are against the work that the Congress is doing. They were basically against the vaccine in the beginning. So those are the people that are very have tough positions, to say the least. And then we have a group that's very important base for Bolsonaro. That's basically all over Brazil. That's what I call a much more a middle class. That's the evangelicals. But a subgroup of the evangelicals, the neo-Pentecostal evangelicals. So much more, they are very engaged with the Bolsonaro. They see Bolsonaro defending family values on as president. And this group is interesting because this group, I'm very focused on them because they're suffering a lot with the economy. And I'm curious to see how they're going to react until the election next year if things don't get better. And the third group, this is a group that I don't think they're going to change positions. They're basically the people that live in Brazilian agriculture frontier, especially in the center west of Brazil. That combines states like Goiás, Mato Grosso, and Mato Grosso do Sul. Those places are being directly affected for the commodity prices from the agriculture exports and what some people call this is the Brazil that grows, that's growing, that's generating income. So those people, of course, are happy with the government. And on top of that, Bolsonaro defend some issues that are very important, especially in the more the countryside of those states. For example, Bolsonaro defends to have a more flexible arms and guns legislations in Brazil, and those are the issues that like that are very well received by those people in those areas. So those are basically the groups that they have the what I call the Bolsonarismo originals on top of the evangelicals and the people that are basically the Brazilian Texas or Brazilian agriculture frontier.
And what is the profile of the voter Bolsonaro has lost this year? Who used to support him and changed their mind?
Yeah, that's basically the middle class of big cities. The middle class of big cities were a very important piece of the PT, the Work Party rejection. They left the Work Party, and they used to vote for Lula in the beginning, but they left the PT. And we are talking about people that live in big areas like São Paulo, Rio, Belo Horizonte, Brasília, Recife. So those are the places that that they were against the PT. They moved away from the legacy of the PT, but they are very frustrated with the Bolsonaro deliverables. And not only the pandemic reaction that was very badly evaluated by those people, but also, most importantly, the economics and the economy, the Brazilian economy, is not responding well. So basically the middle class is suffering a lot, and they used to vote for Bolsonaro. And I'm seeing right now that it's going to be very unlikely that they're going to vote to a potential re-election.
That brings me to polarization and to the anti-vote, right? The vote of the people who just basically hate so much someone that they will do anything for that person not to win. Last time, in the last elections, we saw a lot of hate towards the Workers' Party and Lula fueling Bolsonaro's campaign. All happened in this context that you talked about of WhatsApp, of misinformation or fake news and social media. Are we about to have a similar story unfold this time? Will people settle for the one that they don't hate in this next election?
I think this is a critical question, and I'm going to divide it in two parts. First of all, this election should be about Bolsonaro, because Bolsonaro is the current president. He's running a re-election. So the key question for the Brazilian voters would be, in a ideal situation, would be, do you want Bolsonaro 4 more years or not? Basically the question that the U.S. had to respond last year. Do you want Trump 4 more years or not? The election last year, as you know better than me, was not about Biden itself. It was about the Trump legacy or not. However, for that to happen, Bolsonaro has to increase his popularity. Because it's almost impossible for a president running for office with 25% of approval rate. He has to go to the election with at least 35-40% approval rate to be competitive. That's the reality. And if that happens, then we're going to have a election that we're going to be basically saying, do you want Bolsonaro again, or do you want Lula back? So that's if Bolsonaro increases his popularity. The second part, that from what I see from the numbers right now, as of today, that is more likely, in my opinion, is that Bolsonaro will not improve his popularity, enter into the election next year. And then the Brazilian voters are going to be presented to the same question that they are answering since 1989. That is, do you want the PT, the Work Party, or not? And then this is going to be a very interesting election, because some of those 25% of people that approve Bolsonaro, they would vote for anyone that could beat Lula. And depending on the Bolsonaro level of popularity, maybe we're going to have an election next year that's going to be, again, do you want Lula or not? And that's a completely different ballpark, because right now is the perfect scenario for Lula. Bolsonaro is a bad president in terms of evaluation. He has a recall. Most of the Brazilian voters don't know how to other candidates than Lula and Bolsonaro. For Lula, if the election would be held tomorrow,
it would be perfect.
Perfect, yeah. But we have 1 year from the election, so that's what happened. So if the question presented to the voters, do you want PT back or not, that will depend on Bolsonaro's popularity on the one hand, and of course, the supply of candidates or the potential competitive candidates that we, in Brazilian, they're calling out the third option. So that we don't know that who is going to be leading those tickets. So it's a lot of uncertainty on that side. Everything depends on Bolsonaro's popularity. But from my personal view as of today, I think we're going to be talking about if Lula deserves to be president again or not.
So let's go for Lula's as a candidate now. Lula, he's this political figure, former president. He is an institution in itself, right? So who has Lula been able to conquer so far beyond his usual base?
One thing that the people that are listening this podcast should be very careful about is to read the polls right now. There are two types of questions about voting intentions right now. There's one question that I think is very, very important, that is when you don't show any option for the people that are being interviewed and you ask, who would you vote for president? And don't show anything, what we call a spontaneous answer. And those spontaneous answers, Lula has between 25-30%. And those 25-30% is what I call the Lula core voters. And they're basically the base of the pyramid. They are low-income people. They are very concentrated in the Northeast. And so he's kind of the popular king.
They still remember him.
Yeah, yeah. And they do remember in a positive way. Lula is the last recall of economic prosperity for those people, for those mm-hmm. very low-income people. So, and this is a very important number, because then, just pay attention, we have Lula with 25-30%. We have Bolsonaro about 20% as basically the people that really like his government. And then we have almost 50% that are not able to express and say a single presidential name candidate. So the Brazilian public opinion is not fully connected with the presidential election. So half of the country, and when you ask without showing any option who we're going to vote for president if the election were held today, they don't say, I don't know. So there's a huge open space for that. But on the second hand, when we start showing options, then of course the recall of Lula, given the other option, the other non-option is Bolsonaro, of course. Lula is getting a lot of votes from those people that basically know him. So what I'm trying to say is that what Lula has really is the one-third of support that actually has been his support for many election cycles. And what Bolsonaro has is basically people that really likes his government, but it's the others are very open. And sometimes we do polls with people that could vote for Bolsonaro or Lula. They're much more flexible and much more open to those possibilities than we might think as people that follow politics very closely.
So in the end, we're not really certain of what's going to happen at all.
No, of course, because people are not connected with the presidential election as we are. And so that's what I tell. Half of the country don't know. We ask them who are going to vote and they don't say anything. And then we show the options because they don't know the other options. So and then it's tough because all the headlines are about Lula leading the polls, but you have to mm-hmm. go one step beyond just the headlines, because the connection with the election itself are not there.
Mauricio, does the apathy voter, how much people have given up on this process as a whole? We've even seen a campaign against the electronic vote and, you know, against democracy in general, you could say, in one side of the spectrum here. A lot of people were against that too. Am I right to think that there's not much support for that?
No, not at all. Actually, one of the externalities of polarization is that many people choose not to vote or choose not to engage in politics. So in Brazil right now, we are operating in between 25-30% of potential voters that don't show up to vote. Actually, we are very close to operating a non-mandatory election system. And one thing that we have to be very, very mindful about is that if the choice would be between Bolsonaro and Lula, I think the critical component to understand the election is actually who is going to show up to vote. That was a very critical component, for example, to elect Biden. The get out to vote operation after the DNC here was critical. But one thing that I have to be mindful that in Brazil, in 2020, the court that supervised the election, the TSE, they created an app. Days, like 1 week before the election, mm-hmm. and this app it's very easy to download and very easy to justify why we're not voting. And I was running some numbers, and if 50 million people downloaded this app next year, could be those 50 million that will decide the election. And it's and the cost of justifying, the cost of not voting in Brazil is becoming lower and lower. So we have to be very mindful about that, because from the places that the voting is not mandatory, actually most of the democracies, to understand who doesn't vote is critical. And we are very, very close to Brazil be a case, be a model of a lot of people don't show up to vote.
How much does that hurt these two candidates that we're talking about?
I think it hurts a lot the incumbent, because right now Bolsonaro has an evaluation level that makes his case much more difficult than Lula.
Okay. And who do you think is more powerful, the anti-PT, the anti-Workers' Party, or the anti-Bolsonaro vote?
As of today, is the anti-Bolsonaro, for sure, because of the level of rejection that his government have. But as I told you, if Bolsonaro doesn't present himself as a competitive player in the election, of course, the anti-PT rejection would be playing a much bigger role for the voters.
Mauricio, can we name a demographic group and call them the swing voters? You have polls showing that in June of this year, Bolsonaro's approval among women, for example, was below 20%. Are women a group that can move the needle in these elections?
Yes, no. Bolsonaro has lost a lot of support among the female group. And this is going to be very bad for him in the election. But one thing that historically very clear, when we study Brazilian elections, national Brazilian elections, is that what I call the state of Minas Gerais. You know that Minas Gerais always, in history, the candidate that does win Minas Gerais wins the general election, wins the national election. And it's interesting because Minas is the best sample of the Brazilian population. We have in Minas some regions that are very poor, have in Minas some regions that are very similar to the southeast. We have some regions that are very similar to the center-west, you know, this agriculture part. So I used to call before 2020 that Trump won Ohio and lost the election, but I used to call Minas the Brazilian Ohio. So that's a very, if you have a swing state, it's Minas.
Let's talk about issues hitting Bolsonaro right now. We're talking about a very gloomy situation in Brazil. On the top of the perception that the government mishandled the pandemic, we have inflation, economic crisis, unemployment, and we have corruption scandals, such as the COVID probe on the procurement of vaccines. Your research shows that over 40% of Brazilians are following that COVID probe very closely. How crucial will this be for Bolsonaro and for these elections in general, for whoever becomes a presidential candidate?
Yeah, one thing that we learned about COVID peaks and COVID issues is that when the COVID is really hitting the population, the party that is in power or the leader that is in power has a lot of trouble. And we can the biggest example is Donald Trump that lost the election because United States has faced a big wave of COVID. For example, the Prime Minister of India, he lost local elections, the state elections, because of a big wave in the beginning of the year in January in India of COVID. So, of course, if COVID hits hard in Brazil next year, this is going to be a huge price for Bolsonaro. But I don't see that. I think Brazilians are polling a much higher rate of people that are willing to get the vaccine. It is interesting that it's above 90%. Mm-hmm. Any other country that we have public information about willingness to be vaccinated, Brazil is leading. So as long as we have supply of vaccines, I think we're going to be we're going to convert that in immunization. So in my scenario, the COVID is not going to be a big issue next year. What Bolsonaro did was incredible and that was unique. He's one of the only head of state in a democracy that is not capitalized of the vaccination. not only because he didn't vaccinate himself, but he didn't support the vaccination. He didn't anything to increase the vaccination level. The government itself didn't have like a vaccination campaign, and Brazil is known for vaccination campaigns. Mm-hmm. Brazil is recognized for vaccination campaigns. So he lost the window, and I'm talking about the popularity here. He lost the window to capitalize on the vaccination. So he lost it. And so he has only one variable, and this is a variable that no presidential candidate can separate himself, is the economy. The president can say that he doesn't have anything to do with health. He can blame the states for the security. He can blame the schools for the education, but he cannot blame anyone else when you talk about economics. There is a famous quote from the Bill Clinton chief campaign staffer that is the economy stupid? And for all presidential elections, the economy is a critical variable. Actually, some researchers in Brazil, political science researchers, they publish a paper that correlates the price of commodities and the popularity of Brazilian presidents, because commodities are important piece of Brazilian economy. Presidents, of course, they don't control the commodity price, but they got the bonus of the increase of commodity price. So right now, the deal breaker would be the economy. If the economy gets worse, Bolsonaro is completely out of the game. And for that, and it's a very complicated equation, because like you said, the oil prices are very high in Brazil. The food and basic supplies are very high. The people are unemployed. And when we do some research, especially the qualitative research, we are hearing some stories, some narratives that I used to hear in the 80s, that people are not buying meat, for example, that people are not buying they have to choose the worst quality of milk. Those are 80s stories that we are hearing right now. So the economy is suffering. So I think if the Bolsonaro wants to react, if the government wants to increase his popularity, they're going to have to tackle the economy. And I'm not an economist specialized on that, but I don't see too many windows to improve the economy in 1 year period. There is no silver bullet for that. So let's see what's going to play. But he needs to give an answer to and also what Brazilian has a report called Focus that the central bank collects the GDP estimates from many players in the market. And the forecasts are not very optimistic as well. So we're not gonna have a huge economic growth next year. So this is complicates a lot, because the economy, the president has to answer for the economy, and he cannot run away from that.
Mauricio, do you see anyone coming, any newcomer, someone who we haven't seen yet? Like who you're paying attention to for the next year? And I understand that's very early in the game to ask you this. or you were going to say, oh no, this is going to end up in a dispute between Bolsonaro and Lula, and that's it.
A viable candidate will not come from the public opinion. We come from politics. So that's important to highlight that. And from the political environment right now, one thing that we are focused on and trying to follow very closely is what we call the primaries of the PSDB, the former President Cardoso party. Right now, there are two main competitors in this primary. One is the governor of the state of São Paulo, João Dória, and the other one is the government of the state of Rio Grande do Sul, Eduardo Leite. And I think this primary is not only about, of course, PSDB is an important player. They won two presidential elections, and they were basically in most of the runoffs against PT. But also because depending on wins this primary, there are going to be more, the probability to have more and or less candidates against Bolsonaro and Lula. So this is something that I'm taking a very close look. On top of that, there is a potential merger of two parties in Brazil. One is DEM. That's the party of the president of the Senate in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And the other one is PSL. PSL used to be the party that elected Bolsonaro. And because of that, they elected a lot of people in Congress. So they are discussing a merger. And of course, if they merge, they're going to have the most number of seats in the lower house. So they're going to be a very relevant player. So I'm also seeing how it's going to end up, this merger, because most likely, if they do merge, they're going to have a presidential candidate. And some people speculate that could be the former Minister of Health, Luiz Henrique Mandetta. The other people speculate that even the president of the Senate, Rodrigo Pacheco, can be a player, or the a senator from the MDB, that is the party of former President Michel Temer, and Simone Tebet is a lady from Mato Grosso do Sul. So there's a lot of names in the arena right now. But one thing that I can tell you is that I think after the PSDB primaries that's going to be held in the end of November, I think we're going to have much more, it's going to be much more clear who is actually going to run against Bolsonaro, Lula. And also there is also a very clear runner, that's Ciro Gomes, that's a presidential, he was in three presidential races before. And of course, he's well known nationally, but he's polling about 10%. Very in a lower level compared to Bolsonaro and Lula. So let's see. I think the PSDB primaries is a very important event this semester.
That's great. So you will be looking at Minas Gerais and primaries with the PSDB party. Thinking about what we need to pay attention to for the next year, I haven't even asked you questions about Congress because I feel I need another episode to explain Brazil's Congress. What would be the important issues here for Congress for the next year?
I think, first of all, the political parties in Brazil are going to face a performance barrier. So they will need at least 2% of the total votes for the Congress to be in the Congress. And this is new. So what happens is that most likely we are going to have less political parties being represented in the House. So the power will be more concentrated. This is the first point. The second point, the Congress right now has much more leverage and power over the national budget. So, and as you know, now Brazil has an independent central bank. So the president itself lost power and the Congress has gained power. So next president will have to work very closely with the Congress. So we are seeing the president that wins the election in 2022 are going to have to share power and work much more closely than with the next Congress.
That's great. Thank you so much, Mauricio. I appreciate your time and I've learned a lot with our conversation. Thank you for being on Latin American Focus.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This episode was produced by Luisa Leme. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. For more about upcoming concerts online, visit musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can help us spread the word. Give us 5 stars, write a review, share, and subscribe at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.